Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Posecast, sponsored by BasketballNews.com. Today, we have NBA legend, Cleveland legend, everybody's OG, everybody's uncle, my main man, Charles Oakley. What up, Oak?
What's up, family?
How you doing?
I'm good. Just, you know, getting up and going through it. You know, it's a good thing. Challenge, you know, it's a challenge out here right now. So we all got to stay clean out of the way and stay positive, you know?
Right. Same here. Same here. So right off the bat, I'm gonna ask you, where did your love of the game come from?
My love for the game? Wow. I guess just growing up, my toughness came from my grandfather, you know, seeing him in the field, going to work, doing everything for the church and all the people in town. And just the love came as I was a kid growing up. You know, more you play, the more you're going to love it. Some people play, and I've played to get something out of it. I played, as always, to make people better. I understood the game at an early age. I didn't know I was going to be into the league, but I knew when I got on the court. Because when you're a kid in the playground, you always watch the older guys play. And then to play, you just couldn't come out and say, I'm going to shoot every shot with older guys. You wait till they pass you the ball. You can rebound, play defense. You have to be patient. So that's what's wrong with the NBA today. Guys not patient. They don't understand their role. And everybody can't score, but they shooting shots. It's a difference. That's why LeBron and certain guys, KD, Curry, you know, a few guys just, you all, it's hard to say something about them because every year they show you that leadership and not understanding the IQ of the game.
So were you strictly basketball, or did you play a little football? Or
Well, football was, you know, that's natural because you playing in the gravel, in the dirt, the street. And then I played for Powell Fire Raiders. I played football, and you know, basically, you know, we had good. It was like a lot of good competition. But growing up playing football, you know, you had to weigh in, and peewee, battle weight. So it was a discipline right there because you had to. If you lower weight more than 3 pounds, they wouldn't let you play. So all started around your aunts and uncle and your family. And then you playing a sports like, I think they got that in high school. I mean, like some guys, you're over a certain weight, you can't play certain positions now. But we did it with peewee and bantamweight. They start telling you right now, focus because you weight, you're in the weight. Because you know I had the shoulder pads. I'm going to weigh 5 pounds, I'm weigh 2. Mm-hmm. So a few times I had the 2 pounds shoulder pads and weigh in, but when the game came, I had the 5 pounds shoulder pads.
Right. That's crazy. You say Power Five because me growing up too, I played for St. Tim's, and I know Power Five. They was, you know what I'm saying, they was one of our little rival, you know, teams in the little league football, in the Muni League football, you know what I'm saying? So I know exactly what you're talking about.
Playing at Glenville Field on the other side, the west side. Yeah. Yes. Bulldogs, the Eagles, Raiders. So, yeah.
St. Clair, yep.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit. I know you went to John Hay High School. Like I said, my parents grew up too. They went to John Hay also. So tell me about your time at John Hay.
John Hay was beautiful. You know, back then, though, late 70s, early 80s, 90s, back, you know, sports was big in Cleveland. You know, you had a lot of guys like East Tech, East High, a few other schools had a lot of, you know, track, Collinwoods, but you did like some other guys from my high school, like Hicks and Anthony Hancock's, you know, Hicks with Ohio State, Anthony Hancock went to Tennessee, then Tim McGee went to Tennessee, then you had Jackson, who played with Denver, did broadcasting on ESPN with East High. And you had a lot of athletes out of Cleveland, so a lot of track. You know, basketball came, you know, Clark. You had St. Ed, you had St. Ignatius, St. Joe's, all them big-time schools. But yeah, the center was tough when I was growing up. You had the Brad Sellers, Polk, Max. I mean, it was just like a lot of talent. Harold Anderson. So, Brad Sellers, I mean, it was a lot of talent around Cleveland, Clint Smith. But it was a lot of competition, not just during the season, in the summertime. We played at Tri-C. We played at East Cleveland YMCA. But we went around to different gyms to play ball to work on our skills. We didn't just sit in the house and play video games. And, you know, you want to get better, whatever you're doing as a kid. Because your parents was, you know, some parents worked 2 jobs, some parents had 1 job. But they made it work for you as a kid. So as a kid, I was growing up as a kid, I didn't allow my, you know, mother to just buy me stuff because I was a kid. I was told, you know, to do what you have to do. I got a little side job and, you know, make things work. As a kid, right. And I was coming up, you work to take some pressure off your parents, not just wait for your parents to go to work, you stay at home. So it was just one of them things growing up in Cleveland. It was Cleveland Live back in the 80s and 90s, you know, 70s, 80s and 90s when I was growing up. There was a lot of stuff going on, a lot of drugs, you know, friends doing this and that in the streets. But some kind of way I stayed away from a lot of bad stuff, a lot of my friends in. You know, I made it out and, you know, always go back and do stuff. But just blessed that when I was a kid, I had a lot of uncles, cousins. It was like neighborhoods, everybody had like 4 or 5 kids, all the parents. So basically it was like a group, you know, a really close knit of people in the neighborhood. So that's why we stayed and did a lot of stuff in our neighborhood. But, you know, everybody didn't do right, but, you know, it's up to them. But I had a good time growing up. Didn't hold nobody hostage but myself. Went to college 4 years and got lucky and got drafted.
Right. So you weathered the storm. You stayed strong enough and you landed a scholarship to go to Virginia Union. So how was that? Like, was college even a thought for you? Or was it just, you know, you graduate high school and you see what's next? Or was it always, you know, that?
It was a thought because I was just good in football. I was basketball. So I got recruited in football and basketball. So I knew I was going to be leaving home, but I didn't know where I was going to be going. But I decided to go to Virginia Union only because, like, 3 other guys from my school went there.
Okay.
Plus the guy was at Union, he had coached Shaw. He wasn't even told the coach about us. And I had other scholarships, but I just wanted to get out of Cleveland. I wanted to go somewhere I couldn't come home like every other weekend. So it was like 5-hour drive. So I came home one time in 4 years.
Right, okay.
So I made sure. So it was on the popping. You know, a lot of my guys were getting locked up, a lot of was on drugs, some selling drugs. You know, so I knew if I would have stayed around too much longer, because as I got into the league, I mean, college and got to the league, seeing I came back at home, a lot of, you know, stuff started to come around. So I know if I didn't go away, I probably wouldn't have made it where I'm at today, knock on wood, but I got out. But I stayed strong. That's one thing. I didn't let what the people say affect me as a person. And that's what you have to do with growing up. You got to man up sometimes. Your parents can't be there and say yes, no for you. You got to be able to do it yourself.
Right. So I did a little, you know, fact check or whatever. Your senior year, you averaged 24 points and 17 rebounds. At what point did you realize that the league was an option, or was it something that you say, I'm in college now, so the next level is to try to make it pro and go to the NBA?
Well, I never thought about that because, you know, I'm in a small Division II school. And then one guy made it out there before me. And I never thought about that. It was just, like I said, you put the work in and let them judge you. And they, you know, like I said, draft time comes. They draft you most of the time if you go to a big name school. Coming from a small school like Union, you know, I never thought I'd go, you know, they said second, third, fourth round. But when I started playing against the other, you know, like big name players in them, like all-star games before the Final Four, they had a Portsmouth tournament. I don't know if you went down there. They had the East and West game. They had a if you play good in the East and West game, you go to Hawaii. So Portsmouth, I averaged like 30-something to 15. Then I went to East and West game. Now I'm the only small school guy there. And Dean Smith was my coach, and it was in Kentucky. And he was telling guys, like, we're going to pass the ball twice, and we shoot.
Uh-huh.
And he just told us, you know, he said, hey, we're going to play together, we're going to play hard, we're going to pass the ball twice and shoot. So I'm in the game. That said, a lot of guys are passing the ball one time and shoot. Dean Smith was just, you go in. They didn't get it. He was saying pass the ball twice, then shoot, not pass it 2 times and shoot. So basically 3 passes. So a lot of guys were coming out. They gave me enough shine to get in. That's how I made it to the went to Hawaii and played. And after that, you know, it was just like, hey, they said, you know, my name was getting bigger and bigger. So once the draft came, I didn't even go to the draft because they said you go anywhere from second to, you know, third, fourth round. So I didn't want to embarrass myself sitting in New York and this and that. So I stayed at my college house in Virginia Union The next thing I called, they called me and said, I'm about to get drafted in the top 10. I'm like, oh, man. Almost, you know, I'm like, what? Me? But, you know what I say? They liked what they saw, you know, the work I was doing. I was always hustling the guys, this and that, playing team ball. I wasn't trying to take a lot of shots. And that's why I try to tell guys, know your strength and weakness. I mean, yeah, I could have took a lot of shots. I was 25-17, so it wasn't all layups, but they wasn't up on the point. It was just showing that, hey, if I go to the next level or whatever, I still got to fit in. It's somebody already there, you know, especially come from a small school. But, you know, to be lucky to get drafted top 10, that was amazing. But once I got there, it was still about my work wasn't over with. That work had become for my grandfather. But when I got there, went to Chicago, it was 3 power fours in front of me. It was like cutting down trees. By the time February, that's, you know, after Christmas, January, February, I cut it all the way down. I got into the lineup. I ain't looked back after that.
Right. So just so everybody know, you was the 9th pick in an 85 draft. All right.
Yep.
And he was selected by the Cleveland Cavaliers. Home team, hometown. So you got traded to Chicago, but the feeling of possibly playing for your home team, I know you was excited about that, but then was disappointed when they traded you. Tell me a little bit about that.
You know, Pose, I wasn't like, you know, I know what was there. So it could have been good or bad. I didn't get excited because Cleveland drafted me because I know what was there. So it wasn't like I was going to a new experience. It was new because I was playing ball, but sometimes, like I say, you might not want to go to your hometown. Maybe later in your career, but you want to get established. But then I found out there was going to be a pick and trade. So they traded me for Keith Lee. And I went to Chicago. Keith Lee with the next pick. So, you know, it was good. It was good. It was sound good to get picked. Oh, you top 10 pick in this and that. But then Keith Lee, they got drafted number 11. Then they made that switch. But once I got to Chicago, I knew about Mike. Because I know Dean Smith and, you know, being in Richmond, like 2.5 hours away in North Carolina, you know, he had done in college. And then NBA, he had a great rookie year, all-star and all that. But once I got there, it was like, hey, work still got to be done. So right. I was going to work.
Right. I mean, it's funny that you say that because, you know, my draft class is 99 class. And so Cleveland, they had two lottery picks, basically. They had the 8th pick and the 11th pick. So the word was they were going to pick a point guard, and they chose Andre Miller. All right, cool. So with the 11th pick, you know, I'm in the draft, you know, D.C. and everything, and my family's there. And so right. My mom, she's worried. She's like, man, the 11th spot, you got to go. It's only right for them to bring home a Cleveland boy, you know what I'm saying, back to Cleveland. Right. So the 11th pick come, they pick Trajan Langdon. And everybody was like, what? You know what I'm saying? And so then right there, my mom, she's nervous and everything. I got to calm her down. And I'm telling her, I said, Mom, that's all right. Like, we just going to wait and see what happens. We about to enjoy this experience. Yeah. And then whoever draft me, if they do, cool. If not, then, you know, we know how to make things happen. And then we just go to plan B, you know what I'm saying? Because it wasn't plan A. But I know the feeling of, you know, just going back home, having the opportunity. But I did feel some type of way that they didn't. But maybe, you know, in the big picture, it just wasn't meant for me to be, you know?
Right.
So you,
hey, you get, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. No, I'm going to go ahead. I'm listening.
Yeah. So you get to Chicago, like you said, you chop down the trees or whatever. And so you heard of Jordan. How was that? Did you, at that time, did you know he was going to be as special as he is? And how did that sort of, how did y'all sort of work together?
Well, basically, you know, when you get there, when you get drafted, you know, you come in and do the press conference, and they tell you, like, you know, it'd be nice if you can come back 2 or 3 weeks and work with the trainer and just, you know, work on your game and, you know, show you that you want to be here. We want to be a part of this team for long term. So, well, everything they were talking, I was listening because, you know, I didn't know what is it going to be. You know, I'm drafted. I'm going to a different element. I'm going against, you know, Division One players on the regular basis now, not Division Two players. But but once I got there and seen, like, I didn't like judge it. I just like, hey, I'm full speed ahead. No matter, you know, who in my way, I'm trying to get you out of my way. And I just put the work in. It came easy. Early, always early, lead late. know my craft, know your playbook. Back then, you had to know your playbook because you had about 50 plays. And they'll try, and they would try you in a minute. They'll call a play. They'll think you study or this and that. So once you see that, once they see that they can't get you that way, now it's just on the court. Your court awareness, your smart. And, you know, that's why I tell everybody, learn all the positions. You know, you don't have to know every player position, but, you know, point, two, three, four, five. That's how the that's how I feel, got the triangle in effect. But my thing is knowing your position anyway. Knowing what the other guy can do before he do it. That's to help you out on the court. And that makes the game come more easy. That's why I was more of a student of the game. Everybody, the way he's a big, slow guy, you know, went to school and just rebound defense. No, I knew the position. I knew how the guys cut. I know the counterplay to a lot of plays. See, a lot of people don't go that far. But, you know, so that was an edge for me against people not thinking that I would know that much. So on the court, because if you watch film, you know who know what. You know who don't know plays, you know who do know plays. And it will show, now they don't show that much because they don't do nothing. Well, high pick and roll, side pick and roll. So, it was good, though. I mean, I'm glad I went through the experience the way I did, how I did, you know, to come through Division I playoffs and showing that, hey, I can play with these guys on a nightly basis. And that's what I was about, just showing up and play every night. Wasn't no easy night. No matter who we played, we was 15-1. They was 1-15. I played the same way.
Right. So like you said, they talk about your defense and your rebounding. And, hey, you can knock down the 17-foot jump shot as well to your game. And so now with your toughness and the upbringing, you said, was that always like you had like the enforcer type role? Or that was just your toughness and you protecting your teammates at any cost?
Growing up like that, and instead of Cleveland, I mean, you got to show you're tough. I mean, like you say, when you're fighting guys live two houses down from you, fight guys that live 10 houses, you got to show them that you ain't going to back down. And most of the time when you're playing little lead or then you're playing just with the guys, you always get into it with somebody. So it was a lot of that when I was growing up. Like, it was always little fights. You know, right. You push me, I push you. So somebody right. Break it up back then. But if they didn't break it up, I was ready to fight. So, but you know how that go. But that's why I tell guys, don't touch me when I'm fighting. Let me fight. You know, grab the other guy. Don't grab me.
Exactly.
But, it was fun growing up, though, man. But it was, you know, like I said, we used to get cut, fall the concrete. Cause we used to play between the cars. And you know, always one person on the block don't want to move their car. They see we out there just playing around. But it was cool.
So being in Chicago, you know, early on, was that how intense was the rivalry with the Pistons? And like I said, even like Jordan, his adjustment to the league, and like I said, just the Pistons was always there. How was that that little battle between the two?
Well, I mean, I think that I guess in life you try to see what you can do, what you can't do when you're playing against guys on the court. A lot of guys play that way. My thing is, I don't never try to hurt no one. I just try to play hard. So my force better than your force, let it be. Like a car accident, you know, 18-wheeler hit a Volkswagen, a Volkswagen going backwards. But I didn't have no problem with Detroit. I mean, no Lambeer, they did stuff to other guys, you see, but Lambeer or, you know, Rick Mahorn, they were just some guys that did, you know, didn't stop anyway, but he just got away with stuff because, you know, a lot of guys play with guys, you know, they like we protect Patrick. You know, Patrick wasn't really tough. So it may look good because we are me, Mace, and, you know, other guys, we claw the middle. So he's our franchise player. So he's going to make, you know, with Patrick and the Knicks and that. But my thing is, when I play, I never care about the credit. I just want to win and make sure that, you know, we get to play off and try to win the championship. I never like when them guys into stats. I didn't play with stats because you look. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody said, "Well, why you shoot the ball more?" It wasn't for me to shoot the ball more. I tried to make it. I ain't got to miss it, but it was just me playing my role as a team. I just want to show I can play no matter who I play with. Michael Jordan, Patrick, Vince Carter. I can be a leader. I was a leader too at all times, no matter what. If I average 2 points or whatever, my leadership is going to show because I'm showing the other guys how to carry this stuff, how to act, what to do at all time on the court. So I was a great teammate.
Right. So you get traded from the Bulls to the Knicks. And like you said, you played with Anthony Mason, Patrick Ewing, you had John Starks. And then also being coached by Jeff Van Gundy and Pat Riley. Mm-hmm. How was that like? How did that makeup come? And y'all considered the Knicks to be a tough Knicks squad. Was that a result of the coaching from the Van Gundy and the Pat Rileys?
Well, Pat Riley came in with a trend like, you know, no nonsense. He's a no nonsense coach. He's more of a control coach. Is this way or the highway? I don't mind them type of rules or this and that. But long you live with what you live, and let us do what we do, I'm cool with that. But see, sometimes Pat Riley, you know, he just his ego guy, it will get in the way of certain things. Like in the game, we didn't adjust to some situations because he wanted to blitz every time. Sometimes it called for a blitz on some plays, but that was his game plan. So we had to try to do it. I think we could have did some things different, but you know, this guy won a championship and, you know, LA and coming to New York, we haven't won nothing. So you try to almost got to lean towards what he's trying to present to you. And, you know, we did. I feel like we could have did some things different. I always brought some up in different ways, but he's that control guy. And so it is what we know. We fall hard and a lot of games we didn't have enough points, but I think a lot of games we should have trapped early, late played, you know, different zone. Especially against the Bulls. The Bulls out, we played check and they played chess because they were pressing us. You know, we might not have been more athletic than them, but we was more bigger and stronger. So they tried to get us out of what we do best sometimes. But at the time, I think that we could have, you know, pressed them. Not yeah, the full court, could have put a soft press on them because Patrick will be a shot blocker. So he should be able to take the rim. That's when you press a lot, when you got a shot blocker. So, you know, Pat Riley is one of the coaches that, hey, you know, it could be his way, real controlling. You know, I mean, he gets you ready. He's like a fighter. You know, he gets you ready for the fight, but you got to have some of your, when you get in the rain, you got to know how to fight and do other things too. It just ain't just driving the car down the highway.
Yeah, I got a question because, you know, I played for Pat in Miami as well in 06. Yo, did y'all have to do the weight and body fat too, man? Because listen, I got fined, yeah. Missed some games because of my weight and body fat.
Oh, yeah, he big time on that. In the 17 times in 65 seconds, right?
Oh, for training camp. 17, yeah. You need that conditioning testing, even practice.
Oh, yeah. He preaches. Hey, if you go see him sing, if you go see him perform in one show, he can perform the next week. But he going to do everything no matter where he goes. But, yeah, body fat and then you know, just that's a, you know, but the good thing about him off the court, he's a different guy. He like to have fun. He'll take you to the movie. He'll invite you over holidays. He do all that little stuff, but he real demanding. I mean, I was never demanding. My thing with coaching, I give you all the breaks in the world because sooner or later you can hang yourself or something gonna show your weakness. That's for me. A lot of you got, well, hey, player, because the coach, you know, you're not playing for the coach. You're playing for the teams and the fan, the coach. Like I said, coach ain't winning, he going to get fired. You go out and do your role or whatever, night in, night out, somebody can know you can play basketball, you'll get another job. He can coach, get another job too, but the players, I don't like weak-minded players. I always say, well, I ain't going to play hard for the coach. I don't like to play with guys like that. And I will tell them, like, you know, it ain't about the coach. I'm taking charge. You think I want to take a charge? That was for the loose ball? No. Really?
right.
So
after Riles built, you know, you say that culture, his ways, you know, right. He leaves, he goes to Miami. So now, you know what I'm saying? Now is Riles in the Miami Heat versus the Knicks. Was that a carryover? Was it some resentment or how did y'all feel about that? Because y'all had some battles and when you watch, it was very physical. And was that just because of y'all was just mad or what? What was going on?
Well, I mean, he took the same, like it's like Ali fighting Joe Frazier. I mean, Tyson fighting Vander Holyfield. Two guys, underweight, same size, strong mind in the ring. So basically, you got the same offense playing the same defense. It's just, you know, two the same things. So what he did in New York, he still did in Miami, run pick and roll, trap, or whatever. So basically, it's just like, It's the arm wrestler who can score the most points, 79, 80, 81 to 82. So it's going to be low scoring game because both teams going to play good defense. They're going to be tough to get shots. So it's going to be, you know, I think as he got older in Miami, he adjusted his game more to more emotion offense. And when you get like a guy like Wade and LeBron and Bosh and had Shaq and had you, you know, the game opened up a little more. I think our talent wasn't broad as the team in Miami, but we had the same similar things to do on the court, defense, offense. But we didn't have the playmakers that he had when you played with him, and then LeBron then came. So that's maybe the only difference. He had more playmakers.
So do you remember any battles with the Pacers? I know y'all met in the Eastern Conference Finals. How was that? Reggie Miller, of course, the whole Spike Lee incident. Like, how was those battles right there, but y'all end up on top?
It was almost similar to what we was used to with Miami. I mean, like, you know, playing hard, you know, half court defense, going through. They went to Rick Smith. We went through Patrick, Reggie Miller, you know, John. So basically, it was just like a lot of 1-2 offense, cross screen, five turn. You know, they were in the same place. And then Dale playing the same type of role, me defense, rebound. You know, he was a better athlete. Dale, then Antonio was the three-man rotation out of the two big guys. So it was a lot of the same thing, like low-scoring games. You know, Reggie talking trash, but he knew who to talk trash to. But
anybody talk trash to you, Oak, really? Did anybody attempt to talk trash?
No, they didn't want that punishment. They didn't want that. You know, I didn't talk trash, so I ain't going to allow nobody else to talk trash to me. I just played hard. But no, basically, them games, there were some good battles, though. I mean, I like, you know, this basketball more cuter now. You know, you got guys shooting 3-4 steps behind the threes, this and that. I really see that slug out, drag out 92 to 93 because you know that you're going to see some that, you know, you to watch the game now and watch it back then. I just see people back in the, you know, late 80s, 90s, like, I didn't go to church because I knew it was going to be a good game. I knew it was going to be, you know, whatever. I knew somebody was going to get into something. But now, they go to the store and get in line and get something, come back. You know, the game's gonna be the same. A lot of missing free throw turnovers and guys shooting can't shoot.
Right. So y'all end up being the Pacers, and y'all go have an opportunity to play in the championship game against the Houston Rockets.
Right.
Tell me how that battle was with Hakeem.
Well, like I said, it was a fight. They would have stopped it between him and Patrick. But as a team, we took it seven games. But I think Akeem was just more.
Hey, hold on. They would have stopped it if
come on, it say that. If it was just Akeem and Patrick was a fight, they would have stopped it because Akeem just treated him like a mop. He was mopping the floor up and putting, and he would let it dry and mop him up again. But But no, man, it was a team effort. But we didn't like Pat Riley had Orlando. He had a guy on the bench that scored 20,000 points. And you know, and you know how it goes sometimes. That's why you have veterans on your team for moments like that. He didn't get a Orlando Blackman a chance to get in the game because he's so controlling. So the series before that, I think Orlando brung his wife on the road, and Pat Riley told him, well, wife not allowed on roll into the finals. I mean, and he held a grudge because he brought his wife. But it hurt us as a team. And I'm saying that's how Pat Riley, he liked that. But it was a great series. It went seven, went down to the last minute of seven. We should have beat him in five, but like I said. Right.
It was back and forth. It was back and forth. And then y'all took a two-game lead.
Well, I think Keem averaged 28-10. Patrick averaged 16-8. So that was a different right there. I blame more Pat Riley, second, and Patrick, third, you know, whoever.
So look. Like,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, it's your show. Go ahead.
Nah, it's cool. I want to know. Go ahead. Say what you got to say.
You know how NFL do. If you ever watch the game, they said it's three reasons why they lost, three reasons why they won. So I would say them the three reasons why we lost. But no, go ahead.
Yeah. So look, during that time, during the finals, do y'all know that the OJ Bronco chase was going on? Do you know they cut and it was like split screen of the chase in the finals?
We didn't know until after. Well, you know, I think they stopped the game too. I think, didn't they? I don't know for sure, but I don't know. But it might have been after the game we found out. But I don't really know the details. But yeah, I heard about that. That was wild. That was wild. OJ
right,
chase
split screen, right?
Yeah, man. Hey. OJ didn't want to stop. Other guy was talking about drive.
Right.
That was funny. That was hilarious, man. Oh, Chase. Man, when it going by 30. Like, yeah, you know, LA, they used to always sit some cops up ahead on the X's and cut everything off. I'm like, you know, so. But, you know, he was a special guy. And, you know, he went to, you know, USC and, you know, what OJ did back in the day with the Hurts commercials and his legacy. And probably, I mean, I'd say he's the top three running backs of all time. And he opened some doors and closed some doors. That Chase was closing doors for blacks. But, you know, he beat the case. And like I said, sometimes you beat one thing and then later on you go for some like misdemeanor or something. And then what happens?
Right. Look, you so beloved in New York City. You know, they love you there. My question is, what will it take for them to retire your jersey there?
Wow. It's a glass full of champagne and wine.
Well, slip it slow.
Okay, yeah, I know. I don't know. I think that, I mean, what happened to me there in 2016, that was over the top. So unnecessary. I mean, it's just bad on behalf of our franchise and someone played there for a decade and for fans and people all around the world, really, to see something like that. And nobody, this man trying to blame me for the incident. And, you know, it's just bad. He's lying. You know, like the president. He just like the president. I call him the president nephew because it's similar all over the place. I mean, everything they do is the control freak. He sets up and gets somebody else coming to do his dirty work. It's just, for me, I don't know. I mean, the fans can vote, they can cheer, but this man don't even have Bernard King name in the Raptors. He's a Hall of Fame. So I know Bernard over the year did, you know, number wise, he was, you know, one of the best low post scorer, one of the, you know, small forwards can put the ball in the hoop. For me to get my number retired, I don't know.
Is it important to you, or you rather just have the fan love, the city love, and just know that they appreciated what you brought to their city and to those teams?
So this is what I had said in a meeting. I had met with him and this and that. I said, for what that man did and what happened to my mom and my family who raised me behind that, I really put my jersey to be on the outside with the flag. Just let it fly. People don't have to pay to see it. They can ride past and see it by the flag outside. And I take that to heart. You know, I'd rather for it to be on the outside and inside because I wasn't welcome inside. And what he did on the inside was, you know, I mean, they came to me and said that we want to retire your jersey and do this and do that. And I'm like, nah, I ain't gonna, you can't buy me that easy. If you retire the jersey, but that's benefiting you. That ain't benefiting me. You know, if you want to, you know, put it outside with the flag and people don't have to pay to come in and see it, let them ride past and see it. Let it be a tourist spot. You know what I'm saying? So
right.
That's how I feel about it, man. You know, the man was wrong, man. We in court right now about the same thing. He's trying to say this and that. He lied. That's the thing about he lied too, man. It's gonna be tough for me to go back in there. I told him, you know, I ain't the one. You buy me, you better, my name might be on half 3% on the building of 4%. So you ain't gonna just buy me for no little, you know, little peas and rice. No, you ain't gonna get me like that.
So that's crazy. I mean, because, I mean, outside of, you know, saying the issue that you have going on, he had the same thing. Something happened with him and Spike Lee. So is that all intertwined with everything, too? I know, I mean.
Yeah, that was bad, man. Spike Lee paid over what they said. I think a crazy number of dollars in tickets over the year. I think it could be over $5 million, something, $6 million.
Wow.
Tickets over 20, maybe more than that. I'm just, you know, I don't know the exact number, but. This guy been coming there, showing love, helping you. I mean, it's just dirty, man. You know, this is the privilege. I'm telling you, they don't care about us. They will show you how many cameras they got on the street poles, how many cameras they got in front of the store. They gonna do what they want to do. They don't respect it. They don't never respect the system because they figure that they own the system. So why we gotta respect somebody else trying to take over what we trying to do? Just the same thing happened to the Capitol building. They petty. They petty, man. And, you know, they try to be cool now. And, oh, you know, you look at TV now. Everybody on TV got somebody black in it. But can you do that for the next 20, 30 years? Are you after next year, you're going to stop running bikes and making commercials? I mean, it's stuff. It gets in my heart, man. Like, you see fake stuff, and are we going to keep getting Eagles chances to do this, do that? I mean, it's 80-20. All we wanted to be 40-60. We didn't say it got to be 50-50. Just respect us. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Okay. You know, we got to be an athlete, a boxer. You know, just saying somebody, you know, actor or something. You know, they want to come to the movies, but after they go home, oh, fuck them. You know, not to be cussing, but it's just like, you know, they praise some guys because they got everything and this and that, but if they have it, you know, they won't even give you a glass of water. They don't want us. They wanted to come to the front door restaurant. They wanted to come in the back door. They don't want to sit in the front of the bus and empty seat. I mean, that's petty. I mean, they always gonna be petty. I don't care. I'll never get another deal from none of them. I don't care.
That's real. That's real talk.
I'm gonna keep it real. No doubt.
So moving on from the Knicks, you go to Toronto, and you've had the opportunity to see the young Vince Carter. How was
Vince and Tracy? Oh, yeah. It was great. My first year, Tracy, T-Mac, Vince. Vince was, you know, that was the strike year when he got drafted. And he only played half of the season. But I think Vince came in there just ready to play. Vince didn't know what he was going to do, he didn't know he was having a 22-year season. Wait, 22, yeah. He never thought he would play 22 years when he first got there. But when he got there, it was all veterans there. And we took him on our own and showed him, you know, like, you know, this, that, you know, we're not going to be late. You're not going to, you know, we just told him, hey, we're going to look after you as long as you do what we ask you to do. And you can take all the shots you want, do this and that. We're not going to let anybody mess with you on the court. I mean, there's somebody that, hey, you're 16 years old, he got a brand new Bentley. All you had to do is go put some gas in and bring it back. So that's what he had to do, just come out and show him. And his talent showed on the court. You know, he was running, dunking over everybody. Back in the days, he wouldn't be running free like that because somebody was trying to take him out. But long he had us on the veterans, we looked out for him.
Right. So right there, you brought up a key point where you talk about the veterans and taking guys under your wing. Do you think that's what's missing in today's game? Like back then, it used to be valued. You know what I'm saying? Now it's not valued as much. It's pretty much, I guess, they fend for their own or they teach they sell. But you only had like a true veteran out there right now. You talk about Udonis Haslem with Miami Heat. But like you said, back then, it was a group of veteran guys that took those young players under their wings. And at the same time, those young players really listened and y'all helped them. So do you think that's missing from today's game?
No doubt. I mean, even though I got to leave, but, you know, I was rough and tough. But the veterans, they showed me the love because, you know, I was young and then, you know, from a small school. They didn't have to. But, it was a point of, I was more a man about the situation. Some people not. It's like a lot of people ain't away from home, don't know how to do stuff for themselves. I had all that under control, you know, because I was used to that growing up. Some people don't grow up in that type of environment that they got to take care of themselves. So it came easy to me, you know. I knew that they couldn't bullshit me, so they had to be real because they saw I came with a real situation. I ain't give a fuck about none of them. But they showed me love. I appreciated that. And to this day, they say, hey, they weren't going to whoop my ass. So I felt good with myself. So it was good, though. I knew I had back. But the guys now, they don't have the back. They don't know. They don't bring nobody around them, put nobody around the team to, like, when I was coaching in Charlotte, you know, guys were just going through it. Like, you know, I'm not going to post up. We don't post up no more. We shoot jumpers or come early, why, you know, this and that. I was like, don't worry, why? If you ain't playing, you don't want to come early to try to show them you're trying to get better, you want to play. They don't have that workaholic attitude no more. They just go, I got a contract, I'm going to play it out, whatever happens. That's what I see to the game today. So they're missing a lot of structure. Mm-hmm. You know. And so I feel sorry for some of the young guys. They get drafted in the top three or four, going down to the D League, G League, whatever they call. And you can't be getting drafted in the top 10 going to G League. That's embarrassing. I mean, but they, you know, I'm getting a check. So, yeah, you're getting paid, but you're getting embarrassed too. And that's why you don't see a lot of guys going to live to play like 10, 12 years. And a lot of guys going to be getting out 5 or 6 years. Ain't gonna be a lot of long guys playing 12 or 15 years no more. Maybe, you know, your best player, maybe. But you see a lot of guys get 10 years with nothing back in the day. It's gonna be hard to get 10 years here now.
All right. So in Toronto, like y'all said, y'all took Vince under y'all wing and y'all helped him grow as a young man. The decision for him during the playoffs to go to his graduation, was that a team decision, or he pretty much made that on his own? Y'all didn't know anything about that.
We didn't want to interfere with that. I mean, everybody knows he's a grown man. He feel like that's more important. Let him do it. I mean, we still should have won that series. But, you know, your best player put himself first in the team. He's always, when you got a group of guys, I think you should put team first. When something outside of that, we have no control. But when somebody and gave you the key to the Bentley to go get that gas and put in the car and make sure, you know, they trust you, should trust mm-hmm. the situation with the team. And but he made the decision to go, you know, hey, we live with it, you know. But that was it could have been a good year for us. We could have went to the final, I think, that year.
Wow. I got a funny story for you. So we know about your toughness and your imprint you had on the league, right? So I came out in the 99 draft preseason. I'm with the Denver Nuggets. You're in Toronto. We're playing up in Colorado Springs. Mm-hmm. So my parents, they let me know, you know, Charles Oakley from Cleveland or whatever, you know, good player and everything. I'm like, okay. So I'm looking forward to, you know, to meeting you and things like that. So during the course of the game leading up, you know, preseason, I used to finish plays after the whistle. So Nick Van Exel and Antonio McDice, they told me, they said, Pose, listen, don't be doing that after the whistle shit, like trying to shoot layups and dunk like Oak ain't playing. So me being young, you know what I'm saying, be playing y'all. And so after the whistle, I try to go lay the ball up. You fire the shit out of me and I fall down. And you just look and you just shook your head. And Nick and Dyson, they yell and say, man, I told you, stop playing. Get your ass over here in this timeout, man. And I'm thinking, oh, you got to know, I'm from the crib. Oh, he ain't going to foul me. Man, you laid my ass out. And I learned my lesson. I said, okay, I'll never do that again. Fucking around.
Yeah, I just always do that. Guy, be trying to get attenuation. I said, okay, well, if you get attenuation, I can get attenuation. But now you see a lot of guys just try to hit the ball at the rim now. But yeah, I used to always do that, though. It was just some idea. Like, they call the foul when you're going. I mean, really? When they call the foul, if you don't stop, I ain't stopping. So that was my attitude.
Right. I'm sorry about that, family. And I feel that, don't be sorry, it is what it is. Hey, and it rubbed off on me too, because I feel the same way. Like, they always, the refs, like, yo, you got to stop when you hit a whistle. I'm like, hell, shit, they don't stop. What you right. tell them to stop, then I stop. You know what I'm saying? Yep. So I'm doing the same thing, following after the whistle. But I thought that was pretty funny. Like, my rookie year, that was my introduction in meeting Charles Oakley right there, the enforcer. I said, damn, he just gonna foul me too. That's fucked up. I'm from the crib.
Oh, it was all good. But NBA was fun, though.
It was fun. And like you said, times have changed and the game has changed as well.
Oh, big time. It's I mean, you wish all of them luck, good luck, and this and that. That they just, but I don't blame the players. I blame the owners, the GM and the staff and the people they put bad staff together. They not putting staff together to win. They just put staff together just to have a team. When you ain't putting the staff together to win, your weakness is going to show at all times. At all times. You see so many weaknesses on these teams. They be like, well, you got to work on this. We don't develop a player. No, they ain't develop a player. You got people around you who don't understand the game. You know, developing players, the time ain't, you got to want to do it yourself. Right. You know, now they pay guys to come in now in the summertime to work out, and they still don't work out. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing. So
you said you did a little coaching stint with the Charlotte Bobcats at the time. Is that something that you would want to get back into coaching, or you had enough? That was a wild experience for you where you was like, nah, I'm going to stay away from that.
Well, if they would pay, they don't want to pay. They want guys to be babysitting. They want to be like a daycare. They want you to just, tell them something ain't right. I mean, they lying to. I told them in Charlotte, stop lying to the guys, because, you know, like, tell them something they want to hear. I said, you know what? You, they take it from you because they not want what you're giving them. So they go show you how much money the league making. Because, you know, they just want you to make, don't holler at the guys, tell them, you know, kind of keep encouraging them, this and that. Ain't working out. You miss one out of, you make two out of the 10 free throws. How can you encourage that? You got to want, you know, you got to work on your game. You make two out of 10 days that you don't even shoot at all. I mean, come on. It's embarrassing how these guys, they don't care about turnovers no more. They don't care about free throws no more. Like, guys having six, they said it's part of the game now. I said, if I was a coach, it's never part of the game. I mean, you know, it's just taken away. Because when we play, every possession meant something. You know, right. Six, seven turnovers, you ain't going to be, that ain't, maybe in three games, not one game. you see so many guys shoot 1 for 10, especially on the 3-point line. You see guys 2 for 10, 2 for 11, and they still shooting.
Right.
It's just right. You know. So I guess
they say that's the way, the 3-point ball. That's the way to do it.
Yeah. Well that's why you see the same three or four teams in the top. At the end of the day, you'll see the same two teams in the West, the same two teams in the East in the East Conference Finals because. They got better players, and these bad teams can't beat them. Like, look at Washington. The last 2 years, Washington averaged over 120-some points, and then he made the playoff. So, just, you know, they probably averaged 120-some this year and don't make it.
Who's Oak's best teammate?
Wow. And what's aspect for, like, just teammate to hang out with?
It's on you. You can say, okay, your best teammate to hang out with, the one that you
In New York with me and Mace, I just said in Chicago, probably me and Mike. In Toronto, we just did everything as a team. We just did everything. In Toronto, we had a ball for our 3 years up there. I did. We just did everything as a team. It was like I would cook on either Monday or Thursday, be in town, all the guys would come over. On the road, like, you know, going to Toronto, the leads go through customs, so I would always bring a meatloaf sandwich, a chicken sandwich, a tuna sandwich. I make enough for everybody on the team, so they don't want to be trying to stop rushing late to get to the airport. So it was always a team, Nick. You know, we always did stuff as a team.
Okay. And what is it? Was it the tail part of your career, or did you always have the passion to be an entrepreneur?
That's one thing I always wanted to be, entrepreneur, startups and stuff, and, you know, hope it be successful. And, you know, they say it's hard to be great in two things, but a lot of people have done it. So I just try to just work on my craft or just try to have something to fall back on. I'm lucky I played a long time. I really could really think about things to do in my, you know, later in my career once I got out. But, you know, everything's been good so far, and knock on wood. I just try to give back. I do the food thing big time around different charities and different centers and feeding. I got a thing called Oakley Agency, trying to get talent involved at different events and maybe help guys make some cash when they can.
Okay, yeah, go a little bit more. I know, you know, you say you're cooking. I mean, you Chef Oak right now. I see you providing meals. And I know you had the restaurant, the Red. You was into that. I'm not sure if you could, the Red restaurant. Tell me a little bit about Miami. That. Is that still going? Yeah.
Yeah, it's still going. I got out of that 2 years ago. And I just shot 16 shows for Discovery Channel. So it should be out in the next 2 months. It sort of came out in December, but, you know, since the COVID got pushed back, I got another deal with in Jersey with a TriStar. I'm trying to get my own grill. We got one out called a Hot Shot Smoke Grill, but I'm working on another grill, like, you know, to really do some good barbecue and all. So,
okay.
And the Oakland Agency, and I got a couple of other things in progress. So just going to try to keep just putting things together and, you know, try to stay strong. You know, you're getting older now. You got to just, they say, get smart as you get older. So, right. It's basically just, you know, wake up and, you know, stay healthy and just go through it.
Right. It's, I know, you know, I'm saying, like, back in back in the day, early on, you had your car wash laundry thing, and I used to always just come through because it was yours and just to show love. Right. And that's giving back to the community. You provided, you know, said job opportunities for, you know, your family, your friends and people in the city. And I actually knew a couple of people that, that was there. So I'm going to say thank you. If they didn't say thank you for providing opportunities for them, you know what I'm saying? Going back home and doing it, you don't see that a lot.
Yep. Right before the pandemic kicked off in February, I went to a mission, cooked for 1,000 people. So just, you know, just I just do it for the love. And I know my grandfather, grandmother looking down, you know, that's what they used to do all the time. They just try to help the people don't have it. They try to show a lot of love, you know. Because I know a lot of people get to the top and forget about everybody and don't try to go back and make sure somebody, you know. My thing is, when I was growing in Cleveland, that's why I used to always go back, try to bring some energy to people who coming up to say, hey, I can make it out. You know what I'm saying? That's what I was about.
Right.
And the book I'm working on should be out in 6-7 months. It's going to be the bestseller for about 2 years because it's going to tell me it's going to have some fire in it. I'm fine. Right. I'm firing them. They fired back. I ain't got a vest on, so I'm taking it.
What, you got a title yet, or it's still in the works?
It's probably gonna be the last enforcer.
Okay, the last enforcer. Okay, yeah, I like it.
Yeah, let me know.
Let me know. So I'm sure it'd be a good read.
I'll make sure. Oh man, it got some. It's some stuff. Hey, I'm telling you, it's the truth. I ain't trying to plot nothing. Cause everything in the book. That the story is going to be so strong because when it happened, it was always somebody there. That's a story that like, oh man, it's going to be about, I'm telling you, what happened is it's some bad stuff that happened, but when the people there can bounce like, wow, yep.
Right.
I've seen that. It's real. You know, like, yeah, that's what going to make people get so engaged with it. They're going to have some stuff growing up and my little, you know, I was 18 once I got out of that. Oh man, it's gonna be some fire. I'm telling you, it's gonna be a book like nobody ever wrote before. That's why I'm saying it's gonna be the bestseller for 2 years.
Okay. Make sure I give me a read. So in today's game, who's your favorite players to watch?
Wow, man, I'm about 4 or 5, but Yes, that favorite. That's like saying great. They throwing the word great around too much. Just so these guys can play. But great players. I mean, you got to go with LeBron and KD, AD, Curry. I'm gonna give Jane Harden 5. Everybody else, you know, it's just, and that was disrespect to maybe 2 or 3 more, but they just ain't on that level with them 5 right there. You know, it ain't more than 7. I might have missed 2. You know, I like Dame Dollar and, I know some other guys got a lot of hard playing, but, you know, just to say that top 5, 3 to 5, I mean, it's tough, you know. Right. You know, I know they have all-star teams, but they have to put somebody on the team, like the roster, they had to fill it out.
Right, they had to fill it out.
You know, I ain't mad at them. They had a point. They probably did a lot better than me financial plan, but just conversation, you know. Some people can't handle the truth. That's why I come with the truth. I mean, I know the thing is, you got to know, say, okay, this is top 5, you know. Be honest with yourself. I mean, how can you be wrong? I know some people haven't put their first stuff because they made the all-star team in the top 5. But just be honest with yourself. Are you really a top 5 player? No.
Right. So what players, I don't know, you know, did you look up to as far as, you know, like basketball-wise or, you know, helping your game or when you see like somebody that came before you? Was there anybody that you was like, okay, I like their game. I can sort of see myself, you know, being the type of player like that?
Well, you know, but back in the days, you know, basketball only came on Sundays. So either a lot of people was in church, or a lot of people was out playing. But I think growing up, you know, I don't know if you call this era or not, but I was growing up, I just go out to the Coliseum and mess around with some of the Cavs, you know, the ones a little older than me. And okay. Then I started playing the summer league with them at Tri-C, Jim Jones and a lot of them guys, wow. Willoughby, you know, all of them played down there at the Tri-C summer league. So I got a chance to play and bring it up with Jones and Cammy Russell, all them guys, you know. So I seen a lot of them, but they always talk about Maurice Lucas, just tough guy, Kermit Washington, tough guy. Mm-hmm. And when you hear them name, you know, Lucas beat somebody up to the locker room, Kermit Washington, knocked Rudy Turnovich out. So, I mean, I guess it was the toughest. You know, Paul Seidel, they put him in there. You know, they say it was tough, but I never heard him get in a fight. So I guess he was tough. but he coached me in New York. He was, you know, he's always talked to me like, you know, I just throw them things. I say, you know what? I'm throwing them now. So we got into it one practice though. We had a standoff in practice one day, me and Paul Silas. So yeah. You know, they are
what happened? It was just a standoff?
He said something and I said something. He said something, okay, you motherfucker. I said, okay. He said, when he said, you motherfucker, that's why I went at it. So, we had a little something going on.
You said, and it's funny, and that's why I was like, even just going back to New York, and you think about the makeup of your team, y'all, that team was just physical, like you say, tough guys. So, what was y'all practices like? Like, did y'all really get a full practice in, or? Was the coach always like, yo, y'all got to chill. Like, how did y'all get through practice?
You know, I don't know. That's one thing about Ryle. The ball is never out. I don't know if y'all did that. Ain't no out of bounds. Whoever get the ball, go the other way or keep it and play half court. So it was me and Mace almost got into it one day and this and that. And, you know, it was rough in there.
Wow. That's
crazy. It was rough. we didn't have out of bounds. So one day Mason was going. He said, you know, I was like, hey, the ball was, hey, you know the rules. So yeah. It was almost, you know.
But, y'all probably needed plenty of ice packs and everything, seeing treatment, because I'm saying it was just muscles and bodies being thrown a while. That's
you know crazy. What? My whole career, I didn't ice that much. A lot of guys ice all the time. I'm telling you, I didn't really ever get my thing is like the hot tub, you can sit in all that cold tub, all that. I did that once in Toronto in my whole career. Just messing around. I never said it was cold tub, never the ice. I was just saying. But I seen a lot of guys in the locker room with 4 or 5 bags of ice on them, getting chiropractic and all that. Nah. I mean, I thought that was more weak minded. That's how I thought of it. No. But I know guys did it though. I mean, not the ice on the bench. No. And I don't think that they should let guys ice on the bench. I think that's disrespect to the game. You know. Mm. You know, just some things you don't do. And that's how I feel. I mean, you know, they broke all the rule book. They can read it backwards because everything was on the front page and it's on the back page. So it's just crazy how everything has changed and they keep giving these guys everything. That's why the players run the league to a certain extent. But I'd rather just see it more professional all the way because they keep guys in line more. Now, that's why James Harden didn't come to camp because he averaged 35. He want to get traded. I mean, now he's going to take 2 days off. I don't know.
What would you have done if James Harden was on your team?
I would have called him, cussed his ass out. And like, what is you doing? You took the money for 10 years. You knew 10 years ago y'all couldn't win. So what's the big deal now? I think they got just much talent. He was saying, I mean, you know, you got John Wall, the cousin, come back around. Now you got Wood. I think they could have just as good a team out west. I mean, you know, right. You got a rim protector. You got some different, you still got more defensive team than you do in Jersey, even though you get played with two great players, Kyrie and KD. I think they still would have a good chance out west with that team. But he got to learn how to play. My thing is, they always tell me, if they trade you to a team and they ain't trade the two superstars on that team, he's the third guy on that team. He might not want to look at it like that. He can do a lot, but, you know, KD and Kyrie is no slouch. So
right, nah, they're good players.
Yeah, he's good. He's a good player too. But you got it's like when AI got traded to Denver. He wanted, you know, when you start getting traded, you know, it's mean, you know, he's still can play, but they're going to show you he wanted out. He should have signed that contract. Then got traded. But hey, wow. He's making a lot of money. He can do what he want to do.
Right. So I mean, you have barbershop talk. You have hood talk. You have, you know, business talk and things like that. And it's always the discussion of the GOAT and the greatest of all time. What's your feeling about it? And how do you, I mean, who do you compare? Who do you put up there? And you always hear LeBron and MJ, but people forget about, you know what I'm saying, Wilt, you know what I'm saying, Kareem and things like that. How do you feel about that?
I feel like this. LeBron is top three. I mean, I don't know if you can put Kareem or Wilt at two, but, you know, I just try to stay within the top three. Like I said, after that, you know, it's like a horse race. They basically, it go to win, show, and play. So that's my theory of that. But it's a lot of great players, but they keep putting Luke in Dallas. Like he's the new bird. He did, you know. But I guess the rules, when we play, you maybe can take three steps. Now they're taking four steps. It's embarrassing. I mean, who can't be good with four steps every night? You should be good. I mean, so and all that stuff, you know, I don't know. But I just go with the top three. I ain't going to even start getting 7, 8, 9. I mean, they be saying in the draft, like now, they said when you draft after the top three, everybody else is saying from 3 to 60. Because all of them, you know, it's a toss up.
So who are your top three?
MJ, either Kareem, LeBron, or Wilt, and LeBron.
Okay. I mean, no order, but that's your three. That's cool. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, like I said, everybody talking about, I just want to
see. You got to have one of the centers in there. Mm-hmm. You know, Wilt, you know, they said Bill Russell. I'm keep getting called up, but Bill Russell averaged 18 points and maybe, what, 12 rebounds. You can't, they say he's a GOAT because he got 11, 12 rings. I mean, no, you go. It's just like, it's to me, I tell everybody this all the time. If LeBron wouldn't have won a ring, he still would be my top three. That's right. How much he meant to players in the game. He made everybody, every night, every year, every team he went to, we need to get off this how many rings people got. Because Bill Russell got 13. I don't think he's nowhere near the top 10 best player.
Wow. Got you. Okay. Yeah.
What you think? You think he's a top 10 player? If you go by what you see? And they go back to show him. He ain't have a hook shot up. I mean, he played defense. You play defense in football to be a GOAT, not basketball.
Right. So, I mean, it's crazy because I grew up in the Jordan era. And, you know, saying I know about the guys that came before him, but I just never seen them. So, for me, I'm always leaning to Jordan. You know what I'm saying? Right. Just because, I mean, he's my GOAT. But I agree with LeBron James, how he plays the game and the impact that he has on his team and his ability, what he's been able to do over the course of his career. He's most definitely up there in my top three as well. You know, so like I said, it's just the talk. But like I said, for me, I grew up on MJ. So that's what I saw as greatness. And that's how, like, I was impressed by that. And like I said,
not to cut you off, we can really decide – okay, who the next best two player is MJ and LeBron? So my thing, I always compare this. Well, LeBron is better than Magic. MJ is better than Kobe.
Yeah.
Right?
No, you're right.
If I had to start a team, LeBron or Magic, not because we know him and he our friend, LeBron just better than Magic.
Right.
MJ is better than Kobe.
Right. Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. I feel you. Like I said, it changed, but I just wanted to hear from you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
A real veteran. You know what I'm saying? And you've seen it all. You know what I'm saying? You've seen the game change and you've been around these players. So, you know, it's talk, but like I said, it changes every day with different people talking about it. And people feel how they feel, a reason for who they think the GOAT is, or the order of their greatness to that person. So I just wanted to see what Big O was talking about, how he felt about it.
I got another question. Kobe better than Magic.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah. And that's just saying how the game has evolved. And when you talk about just, they say back then the game was just so simple, but now, you have the crossover, the fadeaways, and how they play the game, and it makes it more appealing and it's more sexy. You know what I'm saying? And that's what people are falling in love with. At the end of the day, you still have to produce, and those players, they really have, you know what I'm saying? And that's why they separate themselves from the other players as far as, of being up there and you say on the Mount Rushmore or whatever it may be, but still being able to be in that conversation, because everybody's not deserving of that conversation for real. Yeah. So
they need to forget about much more. Hey, because you almost got three wing guys and one center. I mean, it's just amazing how you want to put it, but it is what it is. I don't know. That's a good conversation for whenever. That's definitely barbershop talk.
For sure.
Yeah, because, I don't know, but hey.
So being for Cleveland, we finally, the Cavs won this championship in 2016. What was your feeling about that? For me, coming back full circle, I grew up there on 30th and Central and Cedar. And so to come back full circle to bring the Cavs their first championship, it was about basketball, but it wasn't about basketball. Because, you hear all the harsh talk and people talking about Cleveland, we ain't shit, whatever, our sports team and everything. So for me, when we won in the celebration, it was more so like, yo, y'all can get off our back now. We finally got a chip. You know what I'm saying? So we here. So, motherfuckers, I ain't trying to hear nothing. You know what I'm saying? We got a championship. Man.
Ain't no doubt. No, the good thing about it, the whole year I went to as many games I could, the playoffs.
Yeah.
I even went to the Golden State and the came to the parade. It was just love, man. I was happy for the city, man, because they haven't done nothing since Jim Brown. And LeBron, a better man, this man write a letter about him and he leave and he come back. And hey, this is a book, and this might be a whole line of books LeBron can write. But it was great to see them come and win it. Then come y'all. They came back from 3-1. Oh man! It just LeBron did it, man. Just in this city, man. That 1.7 million people came to that parade, and I was there, just seeing y'all on the floats and the cars coming out the arena, man. That was a lot of. That was so. Hey, y'all made the city proud, man. You was a part of being a coach, man. That was big.
And I was happy too. Like when I saw you there, I was happy. And like I said, for me, it was more than basketball, even though it's about basketball.
Right.
And they allowed you to come celebrate. I seen some of the Cleveland Browns, like Ernest Byrne, he was there.
Right.
Yep. To see you there, I was like, man, it feels good. Like we can really hold our head up, not that it was down, but now they can get off our back and we go really hold our head up because we've done it. And the way that we did it coming back, Game 7, LeBron, the block, they had Kyrie, the shot. It just brought everything, like I said, back full circle. And for me, it was the best feeling in the world to come back and do it from the home team. You know what I'm saying?
Great feeling, man. Then just the city, man. Everybody was up in the air, man. I missed that, winning the championship or being in the parade, but I saw it. I remember T. Lou, Tyronn Lou was like, oh, come on, get on the floor right now, man. I just got to love the city. You know what I'm saying? I love the city. I'm just proud of y'all. Even at the championship, I came to the locker room, man. Y'all popping the bottles, and then y'all went to Vegas. It was like, wow.
Right.
I went back to my room and just up taking it. I know they having a ball. I know y'all did it big.
Oh, man. Now, it was a great, experience, a great feeling, of course, winning. But like I said, for you to experience as well, too, it was more than basketball to me. So, for people to get off our city back, you know what I'm saying? So it was a good feeling. So when I end the segment, I have a segment called Free Game. Okay. What free game can you give the people that's out there. It doesn't have to be sports related. It just could be any walks of life. What free game can you give everybody out there?
Free game in 2021? Just, you know, hey, we got a pattern to follow. We got to get under control ourselves and hope this virus can, you know, take us to another stage that we all can get healthy in life. And we can get back on track in life, and hope that the next 4 years can be the best 4 years since Obama's in office. And we just gotta love one another. You know, we gotta love and help one another, and we gotta stop all this bad in the streets. Hope that we can get this social justice together, and you know, the kids can have a wonderful life growing up, not to worry about guns being fired, and you know, let them have their fun in life, like we all have. Let them grow up to be men and ladies and bring something else to the world.
There y'all have it. Free game from NBA legend, Cleveland legend, everybody's OG, everybody's up, Charles Oakley, man. I appreciate your time, man. It's always much love. And I can't wait for this book to come out. I can't wait to see you in the kitchen, see what you got going on that new grill you got coming out too.
You need to invite me down there. When you know, whenever we get something together, you know, about 20 people over the house, and let me make one of them oak spirits meal. Let you see what I do, because we do a lot of charity auction off. I give my name to about 15 charities, and you know, help raise some money for their charity. So maybe get a group donate to my charity, and we can do, you know, we can see if they like it. We can do it again.
Okay, so hey, we gonna keep in touch, and most definitely, okay. I'm with that. I'm with
you. All right, fam.
I appreciate your time, man. I appreciate you. Much love.
All right. Later.
Yo, this is James Posey. Thanks for checking out Posecast, brought to you by basketballnews.com. You can check out Posecast on all your listening platforms.
Presenting sponsor of the Posecast is greensupply.com. With everything going on in the world, it is more important than ever to stay safe. At greensupply.com, you can purchase masks, hand sanitizer, and other important health and wellness products, all in stock with same-day shipping. Best of all, listeners can get 10% off their order when using the promo code POSEY at checkout. That's POSEY for 10% off your order of KN95 or cloth mask, hand sanitizer, or other supplies like forehead thermometers and UV boxes. Visit greensupply.com. That's greensupply.com today.